and I had my own money. And so we get there and we sit down the rules. No one could be by themselves. They had to be at least pairs of two, but it was better if they could stay in groups of four. Riding rides and all that just worked out well. But we didn't want anyone running off. And then we had a time, we got there early, had a time that we were going to meet for lunch, and told them that they needed to keep their money for lunch. And then we were going to meet again at the front after lunch. We'd meet again at 10 o'clock at the front gate, and we'd catch the bus, and we'd head back to Spring to go back home. Well, noon came, and out of the 14 boys, probably 10 of them had spent all their money. And we only got there at 10 o'clock. And so in 2 hours, they were broke. And so I'm thinking to myself, I'm digging in my pocket, and I'm thinking, all right, what can I buy, the cheapest thing I can buy that I can afford, that I'm not going to be broke at the end of the day? And so all I could afford was a hot dog, and they had to drink water. And so 10 of them had a hot dog and water for lunch, and I may have gotten that too, I don't remember. But I'm thinking, oh brother, here it is, noon, and these kids are already out of money. Four of them, you know, were tightwads, which was good. They still had their money. 10 o'clock rolled around. You know, I'd see them throughout the park and all, and 10 o'clock rolled around, and we got to the gate, and 12 of them showed up. And there were two of the little boys who did not get the message, and they weren't together either. And so finally, at 11 o'clock, the bus driver said, parents are waiting, I've got to go. I'll send one of the parents, or I'll send the parents back to get the kids. And so I sat there on the park, on the bench, outside of the entrance. The bus went on with the 12 kids and got back to the church. And 12 o'clock rolled around, and security came with two little boys. And they had gotten into areas underneath, you know, underneath the roller coasters, looking for lost change and money. One of them, you know, entrepreneurial, he was trying to figure out how he could make money, and figured that the roller coaster is going upside down. Any money that might have been in their pocket would be, you know, on the ground. So he was digging around looking for a change underneath the roller coaster where he wasn't supposed to be. And the other kid decided that he would go into these secure areas that were for employees only and try to discover what were in these employee-only areas, and they picked him up. And so I have these two boys come out to the front gate and with security, and I'm sitting there and, you know, find out all of this information. So we sit there, and it's very quiet. I mean, what can I say? It's already midnight. And by the time the bus gets to Spring, and then the parents, the two wayward children, finally make it all the way back from Spring down to Astral World, the real debate was, is who's going to get stuck taking this guy back to Spring? Because both of them were ready to kill their kids. And so, you know, the flipping of the coin wasn't, you know, who has to take their own kids home, but who gets stuck with this guy? And so that they aren't able to say anything until they finally get home. And I think, you know, at that point, they're both, neither one wanted to take me home because they're ready to resolve all family issues right there in the parking lot. And so it was a very quiet ride that evening, or actually it was Sunday morning, back to the church. And I had to get up because I opened up the church that Sunday morning. So it was a very short night. And the two boys didn't show up for Sunday school or any activities that morning for the worship service. They finally showed up on Wednesday night, but they're very quiet young men at 12 years old, which wasn't normal. You know, they had a place that they were supposed to be, and they were not there. And at the point, you know, between 10 o'clock and 12, they really didn't care. It did not matter to them that they weren't where they were supposed to be because they had other things on their agenda, and they just figured that, you know, the bus wasn't going to leave and that whenever they got there that it would go, but the bus, they had missed it. And so discipline came in store of it. Well, I read in verses 6 through verse 11 of Revelation chapter 22, and I find the same scenario. I find the same scenario that because we already know ahead of time, we already know when it's going to come. You say, but I don't know when it's going to come. Yes, you do. Because he tells us through here, you just listen and see if you don't have an idea. And he said to me, these words are faithful and true. The Lord God, who is the God of the spirits of the prophets, sent his angel to show his servants what must come to be very shortly. Now behold, I'm coming quickly. Blessed are those who are keeping the words of this prophecy of this book. Now I, John, the one who hearing and seeing these things, when I heard and saw, I fell to worship before the feet of the angel who was showing me these things. And he said to me, look, am I not your fellow servant and the fellow servant of your brothers, the prophets, and those who keep the word of this book? Worship God. And he said to me, do not seal up the words of this prophecy of this book, for the time is near. Let the one who is unjust continue to be unjust still. Let the one who is unclean continue to be unclean still. Let the one who is just continue to be just to do that which is just still. Let the one who is holy continue to be holy still. We know when the time is, don't we? Because three times he tells us when it's going to be in these few verses. But he began the book with the same indication. He says that it is going to be soon. It's going to be soon and very soon. It's going to be very near at a moment when we do not think we, the Lord himself, will come. When we're not expecting it, as the thief who comes in the night, unexpected and unannounced, he will come, and we know that Jesus is coming, and he's coming quickly. It will come, and it will come almost immediately when it does come. Well, you say, but I don't know when it's going to come. Oh, yes, we do know when it's going to come. It's going to come when the trumpet sound of God has sounded. The last trumpet's going to sound, and Christ will come, and those who are dead in Christ will ascend, and those who are living, who are remaining, until he comes, will be caught up together to meet him for a meeting in the air. We know when it's going to come. We will hear the trumpet blast, and we will know that the hour has arrived. So what do? We've been reading through the book of Revelation, and we see what God has already determined is going to be the outcome and the fate of the world, temporally, not eternally, temporally what he's going to do here upon planet Earth. But we also know what he has planned eternally, because we saw it with the Great White Throne Judgment, that there will be an immediate temporal accounting for the way that one has lived, but there will also be an eternal accounting for the way that one has lived as well. So I begin with the last verse and not with the first verse, with verse 11. Let the one who is unjust continue still in his injustice. Let the one who is unclean continue still in his uncleanliness. Let the one who is righteous continue to do that which is righteous still. The one who is holy, let him continue. You know, the two boys did not care. It wasn't that they did not know. They were fully informed when they got, before we ever left, they were told ahead of time, here's the schedule. They were told when they got on the bus at the church. They were told when we got at Astral World, before they ever got off the bus. They were told at 10 o'clock when we went to the gate, here's how it's going to be, here are the rules, and abide by the rules. When we met at noon, and already 10 of them had messed up the rules, they had saved no money for lunch, had nothing for lunch, and you figure from 12 o'clock to 10 o'clock, 12-year-old boys, you think they were hungry when they got back home? And you figure it's probably an hour drive. It was really later than 11 when they got back, because they waited for 30 minutes to see if the boys would show up before they left. So it's almost midnight, and they've had one hot dog since breakfast. What do you think these kids were? Four of them were full. 10 of them were starving because they didn't get the message. They all got on the bus. They all made it back home. But there were two. Everyone heard. They all were given the same instructions. At noon, they were given the same instructions. There was no need for us to meet for supper time, because I had no more money, and they had no money, and the four were not about to give up their money to feed the 10 who wasted their money. So there was no need to meet for supper, because we weren't going to eat anyway. And so they knew the time, 10 o'clock, be back. There's big clocks around the place. I mean, it's not like, even if you didn't have a watch, there are clocks around the place that you can see what time it is, and you can look and see to know when you've got to be back and if you have enough time. So you ought to have been watching and ready and awaiting. But you know, the kids did not care. It wasn't even registering. It did not matter to them. At 10 o'clock, at 11 o'clock, it still did not register until security picked them up, till they had been apprehended and brought to the front and humiliated, and then had to face the wrath of their parents when they got home. It did not matter. Even though they knew, I can guarantee you that the two boys that got in trouble, they already knew what their mom and dad would do to them for being late and not making it and getting in trouble. Before mom and dad ever gave them a single word, I guarantee you the kids knew what was going to come. Now, I don't know what came. I don't know if they spanked them. I don't know if they ground. I don't know what they did. I just know that they were still alive on Wednesday night. So they didn't kill them. But whatever else happened, I knew that they didn't die. So there was no murder or a manslaughter or any of that involved, but I do know that both of the boys regretted what they had done. But let me ask you a question. How many of us, how many people in the world do not know that they have an accountability before God? You know, there is hardly a religion in the world that does not have some system of sacrifice, because every man in his conscience, from antiquity to present, has the idea or the knowledge that there is some atonement that's necessary to appease God. Every religion has some form of restitution, some form of a way to pay back the divine being that they worship, a way to pay back because they know that they are not right with whatever it is that they're worshiping. Now, they worship what they do in ignorance. The Bible says that we worship by knowledge. Jesus Christ came. When we think about what it required in order for us to have forgiveness of sin, for us to be just and to be holy, when we consider what it required for us to have a right relationship with God, then it's no trivial matter, is it? It took the incarnation, you know, Christmas. It required an incarnation. No man could do this for us. No individual born of woman was able to do this for us, because they all from the start were unqualified. Every one of them. There was not a single human being that has ever been born on this planet of man that was qualified to do what Jesus Christ did. Why? For the wages won of sin is what? And who has sinned? For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. So who qualifies? No one. And so the only way for there to be a redeemer is for someone to come that doesn't belong to this clan called humans, belong to the clan of Adam, the first man, who does not belong to him. It requires someone outside of Adam to come, and yet has to be identified with us. And so the incarnation, for God himself to leave heaven's glory and take upon himself, as Paul says in Philippians 2, take upon himself the form of man, not even just man, but of a bondservant, of a slave, of a servant, and learn obedience to the point of suffering even death, death on the cross. That's what it required for us to have our sins forgiven. It's a great price, isn't it? And with every man knowing that there is something that's necessary, because being separated from God, there's something that's necessary and required to bring us back to God, then the only thing that's ever been available or ever possible has been the person and the sacrifice of the Lord Jesus Christ. So we know. And as the hour is growing close, he says, therefore, those that are practicing their lawlessness, this word just, put the A on it, it's a negative. So the unjust, or we put UN in English on it, the unjust, it has to do with that which is lawful and legal. It's a moral issue. So those who have total disregard to the law of God, those who have a total disregard to what God requires, that live a lawless life in regard, you say, but I'm a very lawful, I'm a good person, I'm a righteous person, you know, I do good and I pay my taxes and I'm a good citizen. That's not what he's talking about. He is talking in regard to the law of God. Those who are living outside of and with disregard to the law of God. What's God require of man? Well, there's an epilogue There's kind of a, you know, we get synopsis, and students like Cliff Notes. Why? Because it's an abbreviated synopsis of the big story, so you don't have to read it off. So we got a synopsis. It's called the Ten Commandments. It lays down the law of God in relationship to God and the law of God in relationship of individuals to one another. It tells how we're to live in relationship to God, and it's just the preamble. It's not the entire thing. It doesn't give us everything that God requires. It's not all that. It's not the final story. It's only the preamble. If you're looking for an outline or a summary or synopsis, so you don't have to read the whole thing, then here it is. And James says that if we keep all of them but break one, then we are guilty of them all. So if we live our lives, even as good people, live our lives in disregard to God's law, and we are unjust, and we've not thought it necessary to this point, then just keep living that way. That's what he says. But you know what? Daniel says the same thing. You think, well, that seems kind of harsh. You know, it seems kind of harsh that he would come along and he would tell us this, but Daniel says the same thing, and so does Ezekiel. In Ezekiel chapter 3, you know, I've been struggling about what to do after Revelation, and I've really been drawn to the book of Ezekiel. But to be honest with you, the more and more I read it, I'm not sure how in the world I'd preach it on a Sunday morning. And if you've not read through Ezekiel lately, you read through it and you can see exactly the difficulty that I'm coming up against. I could preach this to a men's group and I wouldn't have any problem with it at all. But to kids and to you ladies, I would struggle with lots of it because it is so, so, so graphic. But I read these words. But when I speak with you, I will open your mouth and you will say to them, this is what the Lord says. Let the one who listens, listens. Let the one who refuses, refuse. For they are a rebellious house. They already know. I mean, Ezekiel writes this. They already know. Daniel says the same thing in chapter 12 and verse 10. Let them keep on. Just let them, because God's already told us what to do. If we won't listen, if we won't follow, then just keep doing what we're going to do. And there's no whining and complaining at the end. Well, I didn't know. Nobody warned me. Nobody told me. I didn't know what. You know, I really didn't know. You know, the two boys. I can almost hear it. You know, with their mom and dad in the back seat. You know, I didn't have a watch, and I didn't know what time it was. You know, and I don't know where everyone else was. I was with Joe, and Joe just disappeared. So I was by myself. You know, I just found my way underneath the roller coasters. You know, and I figured since I was there, I started looking for money. You know, I can hear all kinds of excuses. And those who are living their lives unclean, filthy, let them continue. Just go ahead. You know, you already know the consequences of it, so there will be no whining at the end of the day. When we stand before God and say, well, you know, somebody didn't warn me. I really didn't, you know, I knew, but I didn't know. I really didn't expect it would be this way. I didn't really know that somehow or another, God, I'm going to have to stand before you, and I'm going to have to look into your eyes, and you're going to open up my life of everything I've ever done and everything I've ever thought or said. You're going to open up books, and it's not going to be one book, but it's many books, and you're going to look at my life, and I'm going to be condemned for the very things I've thought and I've said and I've done, because that's what sin is. Anything that displeases God that we have thought, said, or done, that is sin. And I will be accountable for that. You just think, just for a moment, just think of our idle words, of our own conversation. And it gets worse the older we get. Did you know that? It gets worse the older we get. You don't believe me? Go sit in a coffee shop when the guys are idle and have nothing to do, and they meet to solve all the world's problems. And it's the same discussion, same dialogue every morning, and just sit and listen. As a little boy, for me, it was a town square. And to go on a Saturday to town, and Mom would do her shopping and go to the, you know, the Western Auto and to the dry goods and to the grocery store on the town square and sit as a little towhead boy, you know, and listen to all the old men sitting on the ledge there, you know, because there's steps going up to the courthouse, and sit on the ledge and hear the conversation, and it never got any better. In fact, the longer it went on, it just got worse. And so it doesn't improve, does it? It just keeps getting worse, the conversation. In fact, the older we get, the less we care. We don't care, you know, I don't care if I said, you know, I'm not accountable to anyone. And so he says, so just keep it up. Just keep it up. But those who have lived their lives knowing what God requires, those who have been justified, those who stand right before God's law, not because we're good, let's not fool ourselves. It's not for anything that we have done, but simply because of Jesus Christ and his righteousness. All the song we sung a moment ago back here, not the last song we sang, but the one before that, that because he's in heaven, I'm not going to die. No one can take me out of his hand, and no one can make me leave. That's an amazing song to speak with such gravity of all that God's given to us. We stand justified not because of what we've done, but because of what Jesus Christ has done. Since we stand justified in him, we will continue to do that which God has asked us to do. For he said, I want you to do this. I want you to make disciples of all nations. I don't want you to exclude anybody. I want you to include the whole world, anyone in this planet, any nation, any culture, any tongue, any people group. I want you to disciple them. I want them to come to know me, and I want you to baptize them. I want you to identify. They're on my team. You know, we all wear sports outfits, the jerseys, you know, and especially when football season comes and pro teams are coming in, you know, there's going to be Dallas Cowboy t-shirts show up, and then there's going to be, you know, who knows, I'm sure that there's going to be someone with New Orleans since they did win the Super Bowl, and there's going to be the Who Dats going on come September. And there's going to be other, you know, T-shirts and hats and all of that stuff that comes around because we're all going to want to identify ourselves with that team. Well, in baptism, we were identified and we got on his jersey. We belong to him. That's not how we belong to him, but we identify ourselves and we show to the world, we say, we are on Christ's team. I am his and I'm wearing his jersey. I'm following Jesus Christ. And so because we are followers of Jesus Christ, then keep doing that. He says, so baptizing them and teaching them to obey whatsoever I've taught you. And so there's an instruction. There is a guide, a manual of things that Jesus wants us to do. And he wants us to know the manual. You know, people that, in fact, last night when we were out to eat at Cheddar's, there was another family celebrating, actually two families celebrating their birthday, and the Franks family from over in West Orange Stark, the mom was identified with a college sports team because her son got a scholarship, a football scholarship, to play for Oklahoma. And so she is there for her birthday, Mrs. Franks, and she's got on an Oklahoma jersey, a good-looking jersey. And, you know, she's identified with the team that her son's on. And, you know, they sing. She is her 50th birthday, and the whole family is gathered around, and they're all identifying with Oklahoma and identifying. And the dad comes up, and he goes, you know, the Franks, and you know, have you heard about my son? And going on, and just, you know, there are things that we do because we're Christians, that we identify with Christ and we tell about Christ because, and we brag on him, just like the Franks were bragging about their son at mama's birthday. They're bragging about the son. Why? Because they're proud of him and they're proud of what he's accomplished, and we ought to be even more so proud of Christ and what he's done for us. And so we keep on doing that which we already have begun to do. And our life sanctified, our life in holiness. You know, we don't think about ourselves that way, do we? We've been called saints. God has appointed us saints, which means to be set apart. We are distinctly his. We don't belong to anyone else. He's not going to share us. You know, he's one thing that I guess in my 32 years of marriage that I know at our house is that if it's Francis' cup, I don't drink out of it. And if it's Francis' food, I don't eat off her plate because she does not share things that go in her mouth. So if she's got a drink, then don't drink out of it because it's not hers once you drink out of it because it's not sanctified and holy anymore. It is common. In fact, it's defiled. So don't drink out of her cup if it's her cup. Now, you can drink out of mine. Just don't leave floaties. You know, I don't like but you can't drink out of hers. And if it's on her plate, don't touch it. You know, don't put your fingers on it. Don't put your fork in it. Don't take a bite off of it. And if she leaves the last bite and she says you can taste it then it might be okay because she's not going to eat it. It's sanctified. It belongs to her. And we belong to Christ. We're sanctified. We're holy. He's not sharing us with anyone. He's not letting anyone else drink from this cup. And he doesn't want anyone else eating off his plate. We belong to him. He's not sharing us. He's not passing us around. We are his, and so we will remain his, and we live our lives as we are his. Now, that's what he says. And he tells us that the things that have been announced in this book of prophecy, in contrast to what he said earlier and what he said in the book of Daniel, let me take you to the book of Daniel. In Daniel chapter 12, verse 4, we read this. But you, Daniel, keep these words secret and seal the book until the time of the end. Many will roam about and knowledge will increase. He says the words of this prophecy, close them up and seal them. There was one passage here in the book of Revelation that he had a little scroll and he was getting ready to read it and he was told, no, you seal it up. It's not time to open this book. It's not time. Seal it up. Close it. But here we find Daniel, this is at the end of the book. It's at the end of the story. And he says, don't seal this up. Don't make this close. Don't make this secret. Don't hide this away. I want the book open. And I want everyone to be able to know what's in the words of this prophecy. It is time for the world to know. It's time for us to be the voices and those who announce. Now, that's the message, and that's what the call is. But there are a couple things that I'd like us to see. In verse 6 and 7, and very quickly, as he says, everything here is going to come very fast. The Greek word for quick is takke. We get the word taxi from this Greek word. Why would you use the word takke or taxi for fast? All right, how many of you have been to New York City? If you're going to drive in New York City, are you going to get there quickly? No. Are you going to find a parking spot? No. If you want to get there fast, what do? You walk out to the shoulder and you go, taxi! And you get in, you give him the address, and boom, he's gone like lightning. I mean, they seem to get through the traffic like no one else can. So a taxi is what? Fast when you get into a major city like that. Because it's very quick. And so he tells us, all of this is going to transpire. It's going to come quickly. He gives us the six of the Beatitudes, and I won't speak on this at this moment, but when we get later in the chapter, when we look at the seventh, I'll look at the sixth and seventh together. But just know that it's going to happen very rapidly. In succession, when it does begin, it's going, you know, 3.5 years for the Great Tribulation is going to happen very quickly. It's not going to be like, wow, it's only August now. I mean, August is going to turn into December. Just look at this year. You realize we're halfway through July? You know, Christmas is 6 months away. I mean, the year's already, where's it gone? It's going to be election in November. It's going to be January, and we're going to be thinking about our taxes in April for next year. I mean, it's coming very rapidly, and when this tribulation begins, once it gets started, it's going to fall just like that in clockwork. It's going to go very quickly that it'll make our head spin as we see all of these things transpire and seals open and books open and trumpets blowing and the bowls of wrath and everything that's transpiring will happen so quickly we won't have time to think. And the last thing is that even in the presence of what we know, sometimes we still mess it up. I'd like you to consider that this isn't John's first time to fall down before an angel. It's his second. The first time was in chapter 19, verse 10. And the angel who showed him all this stuff, the first thing, I mean, John, first of all, he knows the magnitude of this message and the greatness of the place that he's in is so overwhelming, he doesn't know what to do, but he's got to do something, even if it's wrong, so he falls down and he begins to worship the angel. And that's exactly what he does here. He's already done it once. You'd think, you know, once would be enough. How many of us mess up things more than once? How many of us keep making the same mistake? How many of us have made the same mistake more than three times? Yeah. You know, we get on our kids, you know, I've warned you twice. What is this? How many times, you know, but we mess up too, don't we? We do things over and over. Well, John did too. And so even in the presence of knowledge of what we ought to know doesn't mean that we're going to get right. It doesn't mean that we're going to be exempt from mistakes and from doing dumb things and from getting it wrong. So what do we do when we do get it wrong? Well, I think humility is a good place to start, don't you? But it's not generally the first place we start, is it? You know, well, I didn't know. It was a mistake. Well, it wasn't all that bad. You know, worshiping in heaven. But the fact of the matter is that John did it twice. We found that he did it twice. And John was a very mature individual. He's in his 90s. You know, that's a long time to live in antiquity, and that's a long time to live today for a man. He was in his 90s. And here he is making mistakes. So it doesn't matter how old we get, we can still make mistakes. Even in the presence of God, we can make mistakes. So I think there's a call in the midst of all of this, because John didn't have to write this, did he? He didn't have to include his own mess ups. And so I think that there's got to be room for grace when people mess it up, even living in the presence of God. When I look around at you and you do something dumb, I hope I am free to give you grace and forgiveness to allow you your mistake. But in token return, I hope you are just as gracious to me to forgive me when I mess up, when I didn't do something exactly right, or I didn't do it the way you thought it ought to be done. And I think more than anything else, John writes this so that we learn, you know what, we're in this together. The angel said, listen, I'm a fellow servant. I'm nothing more than a slave. I belong to Christ, to God, just as you belong to Christ. And I am your brother. I am in this together. And we have to see ourselves that way, that we're in this thing together, and we're heading to the same place together. So when we mess it up, give forgiveness, give instruction, and let's get it right. And what's right? Worship God. Bow our knees before Him and give Him what He's due. This morning, as we stand for our invitation, I'm inviting you to do that, to get it right. I am not so foolish as to think that I don't mess it up. And if I know that I can mess it up, I know you can too. And I know that there are times in our life that we need to come before God and just bow and humbly say, God, forgive me. Forgive me for what I've said. Forgive me for what I've thought. Forgive me for what I've done. And give me the grace and the humility in the presence of what I know about you and what I know about heaven. Give me the humility to bow my knee before you.